request that the board issue an order vacating the formal.
That's okay.
Further, the state requests that the board issue an order vacating the formal hearing scheduled today and impose the discipline of revocation of respondent's license. Should the board decide to deny the state's motion, the state is prepared for the formal hearing today. Board have any questions regarding the motion, Dean?
I don't believe so. Okay. So we'll move forward.
If I may interject, my name is Mark Brechtel. I'm an assistant attorney general. I'm your independent advisor for purposes of this hearing. And Austin Brome is the gentleman who just presented on the, he's the advocate for the state on the matter.
Thank you. Okay. Do we proceed with the motion to deem?
If I may, Mark Brechtel again, you are in it right now. And just for the record, Mr. Venderman is not present, whether in person or remote. Is that correct?
Correct.
Then yes, you would. I would recommend you would proceed.
So the motion to deem allegations admitted. The motion to deem allegations admitted was filed by the state, and a copy was mailed to the respondent at the last known address on record with the board. Do you wish to make any other argument or statement, sir?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. The respondent is not here, nor is his legal counsel here. Any rebuttal? Since there was no statement, I'm guessing no.
Okay.
Having reviewed the motion to deem allegations admitted and hearing the oral argument, is there any motion either to grant or deny the state's motion to deem allegations admitted?
This is Mitch Turbinson. I move to grant the motion and adopt the factual allegations stated in the motion 1 through 12. And alleged violations 1 through 3.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I second that motion.
Okay. There's a first and a second. Ms. Vanderveen, do we need a roll call?
Yes. Dr. Kevin Lee? Oh, sorry. Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Aye.
Dr. George Camacho?
Aye.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Aye. Okay. The ayes have it. Board is moved to grant the state's motion to deem allegations admitted. Is there a motion to adopt findings of fact and conclusions of law?
Your Honor, sorry, Ms. Chair, Madam Chair, that has already been presented in this gentleman's prior motion.
Okay.
So now I believe that you would proceed forward as to sanction.
Okay.
It's at the bottom of the page.
I'm sorry. Conclusion? This concludes the formal administrative hearing. Is that what this is? I'm sorry.
So, Madam Chair,
yeah.
Members of the board, at this juncture, since you've adopted the allegations as admitted and you've adopted the violations, I think now you need to determine what sort of disciplinary action you would like to take.
Okay.
Since we are at a formal hearing, the options on the table for you would be suspension or revocation of his license.
All right, discussion? Dr. Davidson?
The state's recommendation is to impose the discipline of revocation of license, and I agree with that.
Okay, is that a motion?
Unless anyone else wants to discuss.
Anyone else have anything else to discuss?
I move, this is Mitch Turbinson, I move to revoke Dr. Gunderson's license.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. The motion has passed. Excuse me.
We need to do a roll call vote.
Okay. Roll call vote. Thank you.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Aye.
Dr. George Camacho?
Aye.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Aye. Okay.
With that, the motion, that's 3 ayes, no nays, and with that, the motion passes.
Okay. This concludes our formal administrative hearing. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on all parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. This concludes this matter. Thank you. And we'll move to the next task. Tab 2. Consent agenda. Thank you. In the matter of cases recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of proposed fine non-disciplinary order for continuing education, Daniel Brandt, D.C., and in the matter of the cases recommended for acceptance and of proposal signed non-disciplinary consent agreement, Richard Casabona, Jr., D.C., Danielle LaGenesse, D.C., in the matter of the cases recommended for release from consent agreement, Jacob DeVries, D.C., and in the matter of consent agenda, accept the request to withdraw license application, Daniel Ben Edward Race, D.C., and in the matter of applications recommended for licensure, Jason Fredlin, I hope I pronounced that right, D.C. Items on the consent agenda appear with recommendations from the board staff. Board members have reviewed all the materials and recommendations. We are prepared to vote on each matter as they appear on the agenda. Fully matters, which means you are a party or a complainant to the matter, and do not agree with the recommendations, and you would like to up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you wish to have the matter pulled, please raise your hand so I can note that, and you wish to pull the matter, and we'll pull the matter. And this, if the matter is removed from the consent agenda, it will be likely rescheduled or re-agendized for a later meeting. Do I have any? Yes, sir. Would you come forward, please?
Did you want to pull the matter off the consent agreement?
No,
because you're okay.
I'm sorry. That's all we know.
It's okay. We just want to make sure if you want an opportunity to be heard, this is your opportunity, but you are agendized to have your license approved today. Right?
Okay. party or complaints for, let's see, we'll start with tab.
Was there anybody online that asked to pull an agenda item? Just Madam Chair, no one online has requested to have an item pulled, and I don't believe anybody here.
Thank
so
you.
If you'd like to proceed.
Good. Okay, thanks. Consent agenda item number 7E, cases recommended for opening a complaint and acceptance of a proposal signed, non-disciplinary order for continuing education. 7F, do you want to take these one at a time? Or
just take them all. I think we should take them all.
All right. 7F, recommended cases for acceptance of a proposed signed non-disciplinary consent agreement, and the consent agenda item number 7J, recommended case for release from consent agreement. 7K, accept the request to withdraw licensure application. 7L, applications recommended for licensure. Do I have a motion to accept or deny the board staff's recommendations for tab number 2, item agenda item 7EF, JK, and 7L? Please state your name for the record prior to your making the motion.
Madam Chair, this is Kevin Lees. I'd like to have a quick discussion if we could.
Absolutely.
About these.
Okay.
I would like to consider for the rest of the board members removing tab or a case 2023-003, 2023-025, and 2024-048. I think a lot of these have relevant information of cases that we'll be hearing maybe in the future. And I have lots of questions still that I'd kind of like to talk to the doctors involved. So being able to have these open conversations, not necessarily disagreeing with what was recommended, just having a conversation around the situation.
So not offer the consent agreement this time?
To remove these off the consent agreement so we can have discussions.
So have them brought before the board for initial action. Okay.
That doesn't change anything.
Right.
It just allows us to have the discussion.
Say those numbers.
Sure. 2023-003, 2023-025, 2024-048.
28 or 48?
I have 48.
2025, 48?
Yes. 25, I'm sorry.
What was the last one? I'm sorry.
48. 2023.
048. Is that right?
All.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Hager's matter was pulled.
Oh, was it pulled?
It was pulled. So that was not on the agenda.
Okay.
So it's just the two then?
It's just the two cases, correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So further discussion?
Madam Chair, if I may, in terms, if the board would like to have further discussion, it doesn't necessarily have to go. I understand these matters are related to others. There's nothing that precludes the board from calling these doctors back in as witnesses in those cases if you would like testimony for them, and still be able to resolve the matter today, or you can continue the initial action and we can bring them forward with that information.
And I'd like to continue and bring them forward. Have them come in.
That's fine with me. I just think that there's a lot of questions that, and this is obviously going to be on our agenda for a while.
And there are a lot of eyes on.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a motion to that effect.
Madam Chair, this is Kevin Lees. I'd like to move that we remove 2023-003 and 2023-025 to a different agenda.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Do we need a roll call?
So you just need to use a vote.
And I also. That's three, four, excuse me, four ayes.
Mm-hmm. And then any opposed action. By the same time?
Any opposed?
None
opposed. Okay, the motion is accepted. The remainder on the list is Vanderveen.
So you would need a motion to approve, to accept on the consent agenda item number 7E to grant, to accept the proposed non-disciplinary order for continuing education for 2024-028, and then a motion for 7K to accept the request to withdraw licensure application for application number 25-1230, and 7L to approve licensure for application 25-1357.
And we could combine all three.
Alyssa, should we include 7J?
Oh, yes. And to release from a consent agreement, 2023-030. So it would be those items.
Okay.
So E, J, K, and L.
Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, this is Kevin Lees. I move to accept 7E, 7K, 7L, and 7J to approve the recommended findings from the board.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I second. This is Mitch Turbin.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And again? Okay. The ayes have it. All right, tab number three. Next on the agenda is item eight, tab number three, which is the initial action case number 2024-004, Dr. Andrew Moore. Dr. Moore, are you present?
Yes.
Okay. Let the record show Dr. Moore is present virtually. Are you represented by legal counsel, Dr. Moore?
Yes, I am.
This is Margaret McCarthy, Madam Chair. I represent Dr. Moore in this matter.
Thank you. And you said, for the record, one more time, your name is?
Margaret McCarthy.
Okay. Can I get a board brief, Ms. Vanderveen?
Yes, ma'am. The investigative facts and allegations are fact number one, improper billing, fact number two, improper and unnecessary treatment, fact number three, incorrect diagnosis, fact four, making false statements to a patient or third-party payer, Fact 5, failure to release records.
Okay. Dr. Moore, the board has read your response and all of the materials. If you like, you have 5 minutes to make an opening statement, or your attorney may make an opening statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Margaret McCarthy, I will be making the opening statement on behalf of Dr. Moore this morning. Madam Chair and members of the board, ARS 32924E1 requires dismissal of this complaint because it is without merit and does not warrant any form of sanction. Dr. Moore has had no prior complaints or disciplinary action against his license. He holds a chiropractic license in the state of Arizona and has a certification in PMMTP. There are detailed clinic notes for all dates of service as evidenced by both Dr. Moore's medical records and the billing ledger. There is simply no evidence of improper billing, as all visits were properly billed to and paid by the complainant's insurance. The allegation of improper, unnecessary treatment is likewise not supported by the medical records. The complainant received cupping 3 times and Graston 1 time. These therapeutic activities were discontinued after the complainant complained of a rash, as reflected in both the billing records and the medical records that were supported in Dr. Moore's responsive documentation. The allegation of an incorrect diagnosis is likewise not supported by the records that have been produced. A treatment plan was presented to the complainant that included 3 treatments per week for 1 month total, for a total of 12 visits. There is simply no evidence to support the allegation of false statements to a patient or third-party payer. Dr. Moore holds a specialty certification to perform physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures, and that certification was issued well before this particular complainant began receiving treatment. That certification permits cupping as a therapeutic activity. And finally, the allegation of failure to release records is easily refuted by the documentation that has been produced in this case. The records were mailed to the complainant 8 days after the request was received and well within the 10-day time period prescribed by state regulations. Dr. Moore is therefore requesting complete dismissal of this action pursuant to ARS Section 32924E1 because the complaint lacks merit and does not warrant any form of sanction. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Is the complainant with the initials BB present? BB?
He is a boy. Okay.
You are the, would you mind coming forward? Thank you. Okay. We'll try to speak up too.
I'm trying to adjust to each other's voices.
Would you like to make
Bruce Colvin?
Your initials only, please, for the record, just to protect your identity. Just B. Just your initials.
PAB.
Go ahead.
I've gone to chiropractors virtually all my life, since 1958. I'm very familiar with your practice. And take my animals to strongly. When I originally talked to Dr. Moore, their issue was they wanted me to pay without paying or going through my insurance company. I wound up having to talk to my insurance company and said, you know, why are you refusing these billings? And they said, well, we've never gotten billed for this. So I had to go back in and reiterate with them. I talked to Dr. Moore about some of the practices that I was billed for. My insurance company eventually billed for, and he stated that he had taken additional training, was licensed in that, and it raised the bill. And then I'm checking and asking for Dr. Moore's documentation. He actually hadn't been trained for that. The continuous push, as with their master chiropractor firm, which is out of state, if a patient paid cash instead of going through the insurance because of the knockdown of fees. my communication with Dr. Moore, if you agree to take insurance, you take insurance and accept whatever the contract rate is. Very nice gentleman, but that I tried to get adjusted. That's what I did do. He did well on, but it was just continuous manipulation on funds that seemed to be prima facie. His objective was to collect as much money with as little work as he could and kind of conceal a lot of the information from me as a complainant, and that's why I called it necessary to file this complaint with the board.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, board.
Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Moore? Dr. Lee?
No questions at this time. No questions. No
Dr.
questions.
Dr. Camacho, I have a couple of questions. Dr. Moore, were you aware that this patient was a Medicare patient?
Yes. Yes, I was.
And you understand that you're constrained to a Medicare allowed amount, not
yes.
your standard fee? And is that what you charged him? Because I didn't see on the ledger where there were charges in that amount.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you reconciled his account. Did he pay anything?
No,
did
he didn't.
Did you ask him to pay his copay?
Yes, yes. There was no actual payment. We advised him that his billing would be 100% covered, and then we just informed him that with some Medicare patients, the initial visit sometimes isn't covered, and sometimes therapeutic activities through Medicare is not covered. That's pretty standard when it comes to Medicare coverage, and we just informed him on that. But we were advised that he had a special type of Medicare. So, you know, thorough with it and found that he had full coverage, we proceeded with the treatment plan.
Okay, what was the treatment plan?
The treatment plan was 3 visits per week for 1 month.
Okay, so... At the end of a month or 12 visits, you would have done a reevaluation. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. And tell me about therapeutic activities. What is a therapeutic activity in your office?
Therapeutic activity refers to anything from trigger point therapy, Braston, cupping, any type of manual therapy.
There's a code for manual therapy that's different than therapeutic activities. You understand that?
Yes.
Okay, so you coded it incorrectly on purpose?
No. No, we did not.
What about, tell me about the cupping. How did you code that?
The cupping was coded under therapeutic activities.
Yeah, which is not a therapeutic activity. Do you have additional training in cupping? Specialty class, certification, that kind of thing.
I took cupping back in grad school where we were taught it through our physical therapy course. I took a course that my lawyer was initiating going over trigger point cupping, things in those manner.
Just recently?
Excuse me?
When did your lawyer recommend it, you take that? When did you take it, the course?
I can't recall the exact date when I took that course, but.
What year? Can you remember what year? Was it recently?
It would be in the last 5 years, yes.
That's all the questions I have for you, Doctor. Thank you.
Yeah.
I do have a few questions. Board members have questions.
I just have a couple of questions. Oh. Can you hear me, Dr. Moore?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay, this is Dr. Camacho. Did you x-ray this patient?
No, I did not.
Okay. Based on what you found, how did you come to the agreement that he needed 12 visits, basically 3 times per week? What were your signs?
These were just...
How did you come to that conclusion, in other words?
Based on his intake form, he had come with 12 complaints on the body area, which was a high amount. So based on the amount of treatment, I figured that he needed as much treatment as we thought was deemed right. And that's where we came up with that conclusion. And then based on the initial exam here and just what we had talked about, That's where we came up with the treatment plan.
Okay. Did you do any type of neurological orthopedic exam, like a straight leg raiser, braggers, anything to ascertain any type of impingement?
Yes, so he was coming in with lower extremity discomfort in the left thigh. So we did some bragger treatment just to type to rule out any type of maybe disc injury. And then we did some straight leg raise and just lower extremity treatment to rule what was going on with the lower part of the body.
Okay, were they positive?
No.
No? Okay. All righty.
He did.
Were you aware if he had, this person at his age, were you aware at all that he might have had some discopathy going on in his low back?
No.
Okay. Okay, no further questions. Thank you, Doctor.
Yes.
One last question, Doctor. Do you run primarily a cash practice? By that I mean you don't accept insurance. Is that?
Yes, I am. I am out of network. And at the practice I was working at during this time, we were a cash practice.
Okay. So did you push this patient to pay cash even though he was a Medicare patient?
No, I've never done that. I was just very upfront about how Medicare with the initial payment. We were pushed a lot on making sure that, he got his Medicare approved, which we did, but we followed every ethical step. I don't, I look back at it and I wouldn't change it.
Okay, thank you. And questions for members for BB?
I have a question. My name is Kevin Lees. Real quickly, did you receive an explanation of benefits from your insurance?
As far as on this here, yes. My insurance company, best insurance company in the world, like you, I pay for nothing, virtually nothing. In the past year, I've had over $500,000 in billings that they paid. I have not paid in time. My wife is retired from the federal government to get this insurance. Whenever I originally talked to Dr. Moore, he had an initial billing that was like $160. And I showed him my insurance company. It has no copay, in or out of network. Virtually, like I said, I have the greatest insurance in the world. They still wanted me to do it. Part of it was Dr. Moore, and part of it was his secretary, which seemed to be coaxed into getting this prepayment. I stand before you today, going to his final doctor tomorrow about having surgery because I originally injured my back in like 1965. I've had several of them, and he knew that his initial plan was to go for 1 month several times and then to go for 6 months. He's mitigating onto that. That was all in his overall plan was a continuous deal. My insurance company will only, unfortunately, pay for 12 visits, so that's why he has this cut off. But the insurance company, I showed him that it says on my card, which I'll be happy to show, there's no copay. They still wanted a copay, doubting that the insurance would take and do that. It just seemed very burdensome that they wanted to collect cash first, then I could fight back to get the money back, or whatever. The other thing that I took was, I'm not sure what they call it, but it's where you use a metal tool and you scrape the deal. I looked, because there was a charge went on my billing. He had charged for, I tried to find out if he had training for that. He did not. And then I, as included in the board complaint, he advertises that they have a unique system set for their facility that's unique only to them, so you should come to them. Every single thing that they do pretty much can be found in most of the practices here. Our practice deal, it comes down to what they think. It's truth in advertising. If you're going to advertise that you have a unique thing, you should be have something on it. I believe I provided proof in the complaint of him advertising this falsely. And if you can see anything that he does that's different than your guys are allowed to do, I'll withdraw my thing. It's not unique to him. He just wants everybody to believe falsely. that he offers something special when he's just another chiropractor that seems to be better than the average bill truth member.
And just going back to your insurance, did you have any out-of-pocket costs at this location?
Not for 5 years.
At this location, at this office?
No, they hit me up for the money and kept telling me I have to pay them the money and an additional $165. And I said, no, then I three times demanded that they call my insurance. And even went to the point of getting my insurance company on the phone so we could have a three-way conversation. And the insurance company said, no, Mr. Bolton, Mr. B, has no copay whatsoever on anything, and in or out of network or whatever. They were very insistent that I was not to be charged anything. And my insurance company instructed me that if they continued it, let them know and they would file for insurance fraud.
Any other questions?
Dr. Camacho?
You know, I've been in practice 43 years, and to be honest with you, there is a ruling that if we bill Medicare, we do have to collect the copay equal. Now, you say that your insurance company did say they would pay 100% for everything?
They did.
Okay. Now, it's my understanding that Medicare will not pay for exams or x-rays performed in a chiropractic office. Does your insurance pay for that?
Yes.
Okay.
It will pay for massages as long as the DC did it. It will pay for virtually any kind of additional therapy as long as it's performed by the DC, providing that he has had additional training to it. I went to one DC that charged me for acupuncture. The insurance asked him for proof. He didn't have it, so the insurance company would not allow that billing, but any of the modalities that he has or any chiropractor's license for, they pay 100%. Any special outside details, like if he would have had a CT or an MRI, they would have paid for that.
Now, there's this person representing Dr. Moore here stated that none of the billings showed any discrepancies. Are you in agreement with that? That no billing, there was no problem with the billing. That you, did you see anything wrong with that?
I can't speak to what was finalized on it. I haven't seen their finalized billing or whatever. All I can say is they continue to push for more money or direct money from them. I refuse to do it. Turned it over to my insurance company, and at some point they made peace whether he withdrew this billing or they agreed to pay it or whatever is beyond my expertise or knowledge. I did not ultimately pay them anything out of pocket, but I was pushed probably at least 10 times.
Out of by any chance, was there any moment that they mentioned to you that you would have to pay for this procedure because your insurance would not pay?
Yes, this first one was the initial $169. Probably at least four different conversations on that, starting with this secretary or intake. And then twice with Dr. Moore. Well, normally they don't do it. I don't care what they normally or don't normally do. I'm only talking about me, my insurance company, and they will pay. And he said, no, they won't. I said, have you billed yet? No, because normally they can do it. So that's very confrontational that I was either going to have them bill or I was going to stop on it. But they kept telling me they would not pay it, and admittedly they had not even submitted a bill to my insurance company on it because the standard operating procedures with your practices. I know how to lay on the table and get adjusted. I don't know a lot about billing or codes or whatever. I just know I expect somebody to be a professional, put a license in to take. And if they advertise, they can do something to do that. And I expect if you contract to accept X dollars, that you should do it, not push your patient. I was pushed.
Okay. By any chance, did your insurance company ever tell you that there was fraud here at all?
They said that if he has billing.
Was there anything of a fraud?
Just that if they didn't withdraw what he was doing that they were taking.
No. What I'm asking you, was there any indication that Dr. Moore did any kind of fraudulent billing?
No.
Okay. No further questions.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Turpin.
No questions.
Thank you. Board members, deliberation, discussion.
Is there, Dr. Kevin Lee, is there any questions about billing codes he's using or?
Yes, there are a lot of questions about the billing codes. They're wrong. I don't know if he's billing the adjustment wrong, but the therapeutic activities, the cupping, yes. And if it's a Medicare patient, there should have been an ABN form signed by the patient at some point explaining that the services were maintenance after the initial treatment if he had the 12 visits. That's a legal requirement. His records, I'm looking at the ledger and didn't see confirmation of any procedures that were actually done and then billed. There should be a record of something. I have concerns about the record keeping for sure. And if there are cash factors, I tend to agree with BD that he was probably pushed. I don't know if the doctor understands about Medicare rules and regulations. He is constrained to an allowed amount or a limiting charge in his case, not being a participating provider. And there's a difference. Just because you're not a provider doesn't mean that you don't have to bill Medicare or you can bill Medicare your standard fees. Not at all. It's a matter of whether you bill for the patient's reimbursement or the doctor to get paid. So those are my concerns. Mr. Urbanson?
Any
comments?
I'm happy.
Dr. Camacho?
While it being the fact that the representative stated that there was no indication of any fraudulence and that there was no problems with the insurance company coming out and saying that there's any proof of fraudulent billing, I really don't see other than you saying that maybe he put the wrong codes.
And I don't know that the insurance company would be aware of any fraudulent billing unless they have records to look at.
Didn't they have records to look at?
I don't think records were sent in. He doesn't indicate that they were. Just the billing.
I mean, insurance companies require that if you're going to bill, right?
Yep.
Especially Medicare.
Yep.
Well, the ones I work with do, so I don't know. It just depends what you would like to do, something like this. I see that what I've seen is more than anything, lack of communication.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
So I think at this point, this whenever this type of procedure happens that the patient should sign a paper stating that they were explaining the rules.
Right, a financial statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Agree. Fall under record keeping among the classes we can offer. How do you feel about that?
Record keeping and billing and coding, is that also the same course?
Are we talking about the QBI course? Medical record keeping really focused on the record keeping aspect and analyzing and discussing what is proper record keeping, what should be included, and then creating that personalized protection plan to outline how they would improve their record keeping and documentation moving forward. Seems like something in billing and coding, we'd have to go to something else, but that's absolutely something that you can recommend and then we can work with them to find an appropriate course to address your concern.
Either that or a Medicare course where they can code in. Even if you're a cash practice, you have to do this. That might be more appropriate. I don't know. What do you think?
Just my opinion. I mean, I don't think we should just focus on Medicare. I know that's a big part of it, but
right.
Just a general idea on, you know, practice and billing practices.
Just
So we could do just a PBI course because they'll review his record, all of that, and they do, kind of just part to me, they do culpability and coding in that course.
Okay.
So if you'd like to do a non-disciplinary order for continuing education.
Do I have a motion?
I motion that continuing education on that. What is the course you've recommended?
It's the PBI course for medical record keeping.
And that also includes coding and billing?
Yeah, it includes coding
and billing. Okay. I think that'd be
awesome. So just for the record, it's a motion to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education.
Do I have a second?
Kevin Lee, I second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, nay. The ayes have it. And we will issue that.
Madam Chair, members of the Board of List, do we need to be specific, though, with respect to the hours and whether it can be counted toward renewal and the time frame?
Yes. So it will be 17 hours of continuing education in the area of medical record keeping, the PBI course, and this would not be included in the 12 hours required annually for renew. Is that correct?
And is there a time frame?
It can be completed within 90 days.
90 days.
Can we make that part of 12 hours?
Oh,
no.
Kathy? Okay. Sorry.
It'd be nice if it would be.
Always trying to help. Okay. Very good. All right. Moving on. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Great.
You'll be hearing from our board members and our staff. Okay. Next on the agenda is tab 4, item 8, which is the initial action case 2025-012, Scott Smith, B.C. Scott Smith, Dr. Smith, are you present?
I am.
Very good. Are you represented by counsel today?
Not at this time.
Okay. Would you like to come forward? For the record, introduce yourself using your initials.
SPC?
He can use his name. It's just a complaint that we entered.
Gotcha. Okay.
Go ahead, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Ms. Vanderdeen, can I get a word with you?
Yes, ma'am. The investigative facts and allegations are practicing or billing under any other name, inappropriate physical contact, improper or unnecessary treatment, danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public, having a professional connection with an illegal practitioner of any healing art, billing on behalf of any illegal practitioner of any healing art, failing to notify the board of hiring a chiropractic assistant, and failing to register a chiropractic assistant under R4-7-1102. Failing to supervise a chiropractic assistant under ARS 32900 that is employed by a chiropractic physician. And fact number 9, directing a person who is not a chiropractic assistant and who is not licensed to practice healthcare professional to provide patient services other than clerical duties.
Okay. Dr. Smith. Board members, we've read your response to the complaint. You have 5 minutes to make an opening statement.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the board, as I stated in my response letter, I take full responsibility for my actions as the owner of my practice. I'm not here to deflect blame. I'm here to provide context, correct any ambiguity in the investigative report, and to advocate for a fair and proportionate outcome. This hearing carries serious implications. Not just for my professional name, but for the reputation of my clinic, which I have built over 23 years without a single prior complaint. That long track record is not a coincidence. It reflects how seriously I take compliance, ethics, and the safety of my patients, my staff, and my massage clients. I only have 5 minutes. My remarks may sound blunt. Please understand they are not meant to be. I am strictly trying to be direct, but I can be. I hold no malice towards AR. In fact, my heart goes out to them in this matter. I don't don't believe AR holds any malice, particularly or personally, towards me. In his own statements, he just wants two things. Number one, that the massage therapist in question not be allowed to practice. And that two, this never happens to anybody again. We share both of these goals. I can assure the board and AR that outcome he has sought has already happened. The therapist was immediately terminated when I discovered she did not have a license. Please understand that these procedures and safeguards have probably been in place. The incident arose from a breakdown in the internal system. I had trusted my office manager to ensure all state staff were properly credentialed and compliant. That trust was misplaced. While this does not excuse the failure, it does explain how it happened. The manager I hired to make sure we followed these procedures and stay compliant has also been terminated. I have since assumed full control over hiring and compliance procedures. I wish I had more time to respond to each point in the investigative report. Some facts presented to you in the report lack context and may be easily misconstrued. And some of my submitted responses and documents have been omitted entirely. I hope the board will allow me the opportunity to address these in detail. I have prepared a short statement for each fact in the report. Yes, I made mistakes, but nearly all of them were administrative, procedural, and related to credentialing of my staff. Again, I take full accountability for those actions and for the missteps. The more serious allegations in this case involve conduct of an employee. Let me be crystal clear. These allegations have not been substantiated. And if and when they are, I recognize that I do bear a degree of responsibility as the employer of that employee. I respectfully ask, let the accountability match the facts. Please distinguish between my administrative oversight and the independent actions of a former employee who intentionally deceived me and the practice. I am hopeful that after the board hears all the facts, you will agree that my direct involvement does not rise to the level of the staff's recommendation for disciplinary action. Let the punishment fit the violations I have directly and full responsibility for, which again are administrative, procedural, and credentialing related. I respectfully ask the board to consider disciplinary actions that reflect only what has been proven and what I am directly responsible for. If it pleases the board, I can read a short and direct response statement to each of the facts presented in the report, and I think it will clear up most, if not all, your questions. It'll take about 5 minutes to read. I have also printed them out if you prefer. On that, I turn it over to you.
Okay. So we have the complaint forward list.
Did you want to hear his statement, or did you want to hear from the complainant?
I'd like to hear a statement. What about Doctor?
All right, so let's just go to fact number one, practicing or billing under any other name. As I asked the board to consider intent in this matter, in October, I moved my practice 2 blocks from 13802 North Scottsdale Road to 13403 North Scottsdale Road. This change occurred 1 month prior to the allegation and was clearly noted in my original response. Those details were omitted from the investigative findings. The discrepancy observed in the Ventia report and my practice website was due solely to the timing of relocation and rebranding. There was no intent to deceive or operate under an unregistered or unauthorized name. Furthermore, when I submitted the response to the investigator, I did include a PDF screenshot of the board's own website showing that business name address information had been updated and was adequate, which was never included in your report as well. Any temporary appearance or inconsistencies have been fully corrected, and the delay offers no advantage to me. In fact, it was more difficult for patients to locate my clinic, which obviously is counterproductive to my marketing standpoint. Fact number two, inappropriate physical contact. Point number one, I fully understand the seriousness of the allegations involved in the inappropriate conduct. As I said, I must note that the patient, AR, expressed deep concerns about asking to file a report. He did so only on February 21st, which is more than 3 months after the alleged incident, and notably only the day after your investigator asked him if there was a report. the big point, guys. Despite the gravity of the claim, I have never been contacted by any law enforcement officer or detective about the matter. There's no evidence, no witness, or collaboration of the alleged contact. As of today, this allegation remains unsubstantiated, and is, until then, both, right? I should, point number two, it should be noted that I'm going to use her initials as massage therapist because these are allegations that was never hired or classified as a chiropractic assistant. She was hired exclusively as a licensed massage therapist, which was the scope of her role and duties within my practice. She was never trained, registered, or supervised as a CA and was not performing duties of massage therapy, or was only, and was not performing outside duties of massage therapy at all. Fact number four, danger to the safety, health, and welfare of the public. This allegation, the allegations under this section primarily suggest that KS was allowed to practice under my license as a CA, but this is inaccurate. At no time did I direct or permit her to perform chiropractic assistant care or act under my credentials. She was employed as a massage therapist, and I believe in good faith that she was properly licensed to practice under her license. The oversight regarding her license stems from a failure in administrative setting, which I entrusted to my office manager. I recognize now that I should have personally verified her license was current, and I have since updated our internal processes, procedures to ensure compliance moving forward. Fact number four, or furthermore, fact eight explicitly states that this allegation could not be substantiated, which undermines the basis of this whole particular claim. Fact number five and six, professional connection with billing on behalf of an illegal practitioner. I ask again that the board consider intent. At the time KS was hired and while she was providing massage services, I genuinely believe she was a licensed massage therapist. I had no reason to believe otherwise, and I never knowingly allowed or facilitated billing on unlicensed services. There was no effort to circumvent the law. No financial gain or benefit was sought through deceit. Once I discovered she did not hold an active license, she was immediately terminated and her active patient was revoked. This was a serious administrative error, not a willful violation. Fact number four, failing to notify the board of hiring a chiropractic assistant. KS was never hired or designated as a chiropractic assistant, and therefore I did not submit any CA registration forms to the board. She was hired solely as a massage therapist, and I was led to believe that she held her valid LMT license at that time. She was classified, this was a classification and credentialing error, not an attempt to bypass any board oversight. Fact number eight, failing to supervise a chiropractic assistant. In the investigator's notes, the board staff could not substantiate this allegation, therefore this should not used as evidence of violation. Fact number nine, directing a person who is not a CA or licensed to provide patient services. Again, KS was hired to perform massage therapy only, and that was the extent of her duty. I did not direct her to perform any chiropractic functions or clinical tasks outside of what I believe was in her massage therapy scope. Once again, this was based on the belief that she held a valid active credential. I learned otherwise, I acted swiftly to terminate her employment to prevent further issues. I mean, that's pretty much a summary of each one of them, but I do welcome any other questions.
Thank you, Doctor. Shall we bring the complaint forward first? Okay. the complainant with initials, they are present today.
I am online.
Thank you. State your name, just your initials, please.
Initials are. Identify you. Sure. Initials are AR Alpha Romeo.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes to make an opening statement, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to go a little bit in reverse order to respond to some of Dr. Smith's items. I do want to make note in light of the complaint I had first contacted him via phone. He was paged as an emergency item on Sunday, November the 9th, to be notified of the situation. I had a verbal phone conversation talking through the allegations of that were made towards KS. I also want to make note that the formal complaint and at his suggestion was to submit an Arizona Massage Board complaint, which I had done on the 16th of November of 2024, to which 2 days later I received a phone call from the Massage Board saying that KS was not a licensed massage therapist anywhere under Arizona, and they had guided me to go to the chiropractic board as she may be operating under Dr. Smith's licensure. So this is what led to that submission of this complaint. And that complaint, for the doctor's reference, was made on November 19th of 2024. Administratively, there may have been some, you know, delays with the board and hearing and resting the case. I had spoken to some individuals at that time, in between the time, and February was likely the time where it was formalized and written and submitted to the doctor. But I do want to make note of the chain of events that led to the submission of this complaint in the manner in which it was. Historically, myself and my wife have been patrons of Dr. Scott's practice for well over a decade through a multitude of locations and several other therapists. And we had no issues whatsoever, as I noted in my detailed readout of the improper contact touching by KS. You know, this was a first and a regrettable and very surprising situation for myself. You know, I will note also anecdotally in very idle chit-chat sessions, while I deemed KS as a very well-established therapist, as the treatment I received was professional and very therapeutic. I had asked how long she had been practicing, and she said, "Oh, I'm fairly new, and that Dr. Scott has been very nice to let me work under his license." I don't know how that was noted. I don't know how factual that was. I just wanted to make note for the record that that comment was shared with me in idle chit chat during a service. Personally speaking, I have been undergoing 6+ months since the ordeal of trauma counseling under my own expense. It has been very, very difficult. My wife and I of 22 years are navigating this very, very difficult situation emotionally and traumatically. This does carry forward through, has repercussions and echoes, you know, impacting my wife's well-being as well. So this has been a very, very tough item. While the board was reviewing the complaint, from the duration of November 19th through, you know, late February, about the 90-day window, you know, I did see that KS was still available on Dr. Scott's practice's website with full availability in practice. I would presume maybe there was administration or administrative items, but that commitment on the verbal phone conversation I had on the 9th of November with him that she would be terminated immediately did not follow through. It was unfortunate to witness that and see that KS was still available for practice and potentially harming others in that time. Short of going into further details of the experience myself, I think I'll pause and see if there are any questions.
Thank you so much. Board members, starting with Dr. Lee, do you have any questions for Dr. Smith?
Dr. Smith, I do. Dr. Smith, I have a question about your two practice names. In one, I believe you didn't have the chiropractic label on there. Is that correct? You had just one is a massage, one was a chiropractic and massage?
No, they both had chiropractic in it. Modern massage and chiropractic. And, well, it's Dr. Scott and Smith Chiropractic LLC, DBA, Integrated Chiropractic Health Services, also DBA, Modern Massage and Chiropractic.
And you're offering massage as part of your patient base for therapy?
So in my office, there is no, if they are doing chiropractic service, my treatment plans would never have them do massage therapy as part of my chiropractic plan. That's always separate. So you can be a massage
clients in my office or a chiropractic client, patient in my office who decides on their own to do massage, but they never kind of go in together where my treatment plan is going to be like, hey, you have to go see this massage therapist.
Do you recommend or refer for chiropractic care?
Do I?
For your patients, chiropractic patients.
I mean, I have the services available and say, yeah, this could help you, but it's not part of your treatment plan, for sure.
And did you meet with the patients in question at any time, consultation, exam, over
no.
the years that they were patroning your care clinic?
Just maybe hide in the waiting room, but he's never been a patient of mine. His wife has never been a patient of mine. Only massage client.
No further questions?
Yes, just a few. When did you discover KS had no license?
Honestly, not until a text message, which is in your exhibit, directly, do you have a license? She was like, no. And she went so far as to say she had it, but then it was withdrawn because of some kind of court problems that she had, and they took it away from her. So I mean, she was just lying the whole entire time that she was with me that she had it. So, I mean, it wasn't until that text message, which you have, I don't have that with me. I can look it up really fast if you'd like. But it wasn't literally until I fired her that I found out. I'd like to point out that, I mean, after I talked to AR, I am very sympathetic to AR, and like I said, I hold no malice towards AR. My heart bleeds for him in this situation, and nobody wants to go through that. I talked to my legal counsel, and they told me that if I fired AS at that time without it being substantiated, I could have a lawsuit on my hands for wrongful termination. So he was like, don't do that right now. You're opening yourself up. So it was under direct legal advice that I did not terminate her.
How many employees does your practice have?
Right now?
Yeah.
Just four massage therapists, a contractor filler out of state, and then I have two virtual assistants out. Now, when this alleged thing happened, we had just moved into a much smaller space, as noted, and that's why the fact number one, it looked like we had two different locations and all that stuff. It was a much bigger practice, and at one point, I think I had like 10 to 14 massage therapists, two front desks, the manager, and the contract building. I mean, it was a much bigger practice, but since this has all gone down, I've gotten rid of my office manager. I do everything, and it's only four massage therapists at this point.
I guess my question is, even with 14, why weren't you the person to verify license status?
And again, I take full responsibility for that. When you scale up like that, you can't do everything. I mean, it becomes almost impossible. You try to hire staff to help you along the way. So I hired a manager that part of her direct responsibilities were to make sure that we were properly credentialed and that we're in compliance with everything. And yeah, it's my mistake, and I should have had some kind of oversight to make sure that she did her job, and I didn't, and I take full responsibility for that.
And do you hire at that time and now? Do you hire you personally are the one
now I
who are
now I
and did you delegate that?
Yeah, she was the one that actually interviewed the massage therapist, did the hands on. Sometimes I would do the hands on, and then she would finish up all the paperwork. My manager would finish up all the paperwork and make sure that they got entered into Gusto or paying our direct payment system, all that kind of thing.
There's a reference in what you submitted to
the oversight regarding KS being because the manager was let go during the time?
Well, yeah. So this is after she was hired. KS was hired, and she was just working, right? And then we are moving into a smaller facility, and I let the manager go, not because of failing. Obviously she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do as far as administering and making sure that we were compliant. It just got to a point where the manager had too many political and religious points of view that kept on popping up in my clinic and became quite a problem. She kept on kind of engaging with clients and patients about religious and political stuff because of our environment right now is kind of that right now. So I asked her to stop, and she wouldn't stop. And that kind of ended our thing. But she was going to come to the new spot at all anyway, just because we were moving into a much smaller spot. It's only going to be four people. I didn't really need a picture of that.
And would you be able to, or do you currently now verify, or just walk me through, what is your process in employing
right.
any therapist?
Right. So, again, systems were always in place. I mean, I really do hold that responsibility. I mean, like, we have, when an applicant comes in, obviously there's an application that they fill out. On top of that application is a checklist of all the things that they're supposed to have, including a license, right? So, I mean, they go through and they check off each part of that application and make sure that we are compliant and we have everything in that packet. So it's kind of like a packet. Why and how Christina got through that, I can't tell you. I have no idea. I mean, it ultimately is my responsibility to make sure that each one of my people that's working under me is credentialed. And again, I take full responsibility for that. Since then, I don't plan on hiring anybody else. It's a small office. The four people that have been with me for years. I'm winding down. I've been doing this for 26 years now. My shoulders are done. My wrists are done. I'm at a point where four, five, six massage therapists and me. That's it. I don't want a big practice anymore. So I'll be the one doing all the credentialing, all the hiring, all the firing. It will now be directly on me.
And were you, had you downsized at the time that your chiropractic assistant's license had lapsed?
A chiropractic assistant's license?
Yes.
Are you talking about KS's?
I thought we had a allegation regarding Livingston.
So Tiffany Livingston. So she was registered with the board in October. Apparently, the board went digital and you had to reapply as a chiropractic assistant. I didn't know this. So she was registered. Everything was good with her. I honestly, when I wrote that response, I thought that the investigators were talking about Tiffany Livingston. Turns out, after I got the fact investigative report, they were talking about AS not having her chiropractic assistant licensure, not about Tiffany Livingston. Everything with Tiffany was, and I think, pretty good order, except for she wasn't loaded up to the new digital PA stuff that is now supposed to have.
Is that consistent with what we, okay. No, I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Dr. Camacho.
Yes, I have AR. Are you still on the line, AR?
Yes, I am.
How many massages did you get from KS?
It was probably about 4 to 5, maybe 6. Dr. Smith was running some promotions, so I was going probably every couple of weeks. Every 2 or 3 weeks
when you received the first massage, you decided to go back for the second, third, fourth, and fifth?
Yes. Yeah. Her treatment style was very therapeutic, was very relieving and relaxing. And I had no reason to to presume that any wrongdoing would have occurred under her care. But yes, the services were excellent until this incident.
So you were pleased with what you received?
Correct.
Okay. All right, no further questions. Thank you.
We have a little bit out of order, Doctor, but I did have a question for you. What is a virtual assistant? You have two virtual assistants?
Yeah, they are appointment setters, and they are located in the Philippines.
Okay. That's all they do is set appointments?
Yes.
Thank you. And when you were talking about your beefing up your compliance, so to speak, in your office, I didn't hear you say how or even if you are verifying licenses.
So in the stuff that I submitted in the response, I did show that every other employee that I had was in total compliance. And in beefing up my measures, again, I did have good measures in place. It's just that my trust in my manager to follow through with them was misled. I should have checked on it, and that, of course, was my fault.
And so now your follow through is your verifying.
I do everything.
And how do you do that?
Well, I do the procedures that were already in place. I have if I have to hire somebody, I do have a packet, and it has the checklist of everything that we need to do.
Does anyone make a phone call to the board of massage therapy, for example?
Absolutely. They would have to present their license to me. They would have to. All my massage therapists also carry their own insurance. So every year we have to get their insurance to make sure that they have their license and they're fully insured.
Any other questions, board members? Shall we deliberate? Comments? Concerns? Dr. Turbinson? Excuse me.
I have significant concerns regarding just the you know, you delegate to your own peril in a way. I think that there is a lot of, you know, lack of oversight here. That's very concerning to me. And I think you, and the doctor does take responsibility for that. So that's what concerns me the most. I think some of the other allegations regarding the therapist are a little bit outside maybe our purview. Just because, you know, the doctor wasn't involved in what actually happened.
Okay. Dr. Lee, any comments?
I would agree. I don't think that 10 or 12 people in an office is enough time to keep track of for verifying. Also, a little concerned that there's two separate businesses under one practice. I don't know how that works. I mean, there's requirements that if you're running a chiropractic office, you have certain things you have to do, and if you're running a massage business, it's different. So I think that's a concern.
So that's confusing. It's confusing the patients. And ultimately, the chiropractor who owns both businesses should be responsible 100% on both sides, again, to protect the public so they know that you're following the same procedures, protocols, your legal compliance is in place. I see a need for a compliance course myself. What do you guys think?
I would agree.
We have special course we can... And while she's checking on that, I would entertain a motion.
Would this be, are you disciplinary or non-disciplinary?
Non-disciplinary. It would be my suggestion.
I motion that, non-disciplinary.
We'll see what Ms. Vanderveen can come up with there.
But there's a, hold on, it's not on the list, but there's a risk management course from CBI.
Okay.
There is one list on the
risk management essentials, RM10.
RM10 course. which is understanding common legal pitfalls, risks that impact clinicians and healthcare organizations is essential to providing safe patient care. The risk management essential course, participants develop deeper understanding of the potential risk clinicians face regarding laws and rules, ethics, communications, boundaries, documentation, and prescribing. Obviously, that part doesn't apply to chiropractic care, but they can identify risk factors, and then again, they create that personalized protection plan of practical strategies and solutions to protect their patients and their career.
Sounds good. Even though I know you're on the downside, doctor, getting close to retiring, I think you would really benefit from this. Especially if you're running multiple businesses, I think you need protection.
Yes, ma'am. When you walk into my practice, it's just one name. It's just modern massage and chiropractic. And, I mean, most chiropractors in the practice are wrong. They have a legal name. Usually their name's got a Smith chiropractic, DBA, whatever their practice is, right? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. It's not that I have two practices running under each other.
I understand that they are separate because your CAs don't work as massage therapists and massage therapists. Okay, I would entertain a motion at this point.
May I ask a question?
We're past that. We're at the deliberations. I'm sorry.
I can do it. This is Mitch Turbitz, and I move that the board issue a non-disciplinary order requiring compliance or completion of the EBI education course risk management essentials RM10 within 90 days, which is separate and apart from any other requirements required for license for maintaining licensure.
Okay. Do I have a second?
This is Kevin Lee. I second that.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay. On the motion of all in favor, we are going to issue the non-disciplinary requirement for continuing education hours and risk management. After you'll be hearing from the board. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good day, Doc.
Thank you.
If shoulders bother you, change your technique.
Oh, no, it's an activator, right?
Okay. You want to take a short break at this point, Ms. Anderson? Yes,
ma'am. Yeah. Here you go.
Okay.
Oh, you're the detective?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No worries. I didn't know you were here. Yes, you were free to go.
Cool. Thank you.
We didn't know the detective was here. We just subpoenaed the detective for that case.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short recess. It is 10:27. We'll come back in 15 minutes. All right. Item number 9, tab 5, which was previously before the board, of 25-1284. Heron Askar, are you present, doctor?
I believe he's online. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, there he is.
Okay. Are you represented by an attorney, doctor?
Yes. Hi. You have Michael Rain on behalf of Dr. Askar.
Okay. Please introduce yourself.
Dr. Askar,
formal.
Okay. I'm sorry. Dr. Askar, if you want to announce your presence.
Hi. I'm Dr. Askar. I am present.
Hi.
And again, your attorney's name was?
Michael Rain.
Thank you. Ms. Anderveen, can we get a board reach?
Madam Chair, this item was before you previously, and you offered the licensee a consent agreement for licensure with the condition that he take and complete the spec exam. And I believe, if I understand, the licensee is present here today requesting that he not be required to take the spec exam since he just recently passed part 3 of the national exam. However, the reason the board requested that he take and pass the spec exam is because it has been 5 years since he graduated from chiropractic college and has not been in active practice and has not maintained or completed in any continuing ed in that time and has not been licensed. The board staff reached out to the national exam to Dr. Bruce Schatz, who's the vice president of testing at NBCE, and said that there is a nuance between the part three and the spec examination. The, fundamentally, the two, as this is in your report, they are technically the same. However, their application and administration are different to different candidates. Part three is specifically designed for chiropractic students nearing the end of graduation and who have recently graduated. It's the assessment of their comprehensive knowledge and readiness to enter the field. The spec examination is a more in-depth evaluation in intent for individuals who have either not practiced chiropractic since their graduation or have not experienced a significant lapse in their practice. So that's the difference between the two exams, which was the reason we were asking for him to take and pass the spec, because he's not practiced chiropractic since he graduated from college and he is not a recent graduate from college. And with that, that completes my brief, unless you have other questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Vanderveen. Dr. Afkar, the board has read your response to the complaint, and we are going to give you or your attorney 5 minutes to make an opening statement.
Thank you, Chair Powell. We appreciate the opportunity to come in front of you and ask you to reconsider the decision you had made. Since you've read our response, I'll be brief in summarizing it. But in short, the request that you have made is not consistent with Arizona law. Under Title 41, there is something called the Regulatory Bill of Rights that governs all agencies. And it says that no agency may impose a condition of licensure that's not set forth in statute or rule. Requiring an applicant to pass the spec exam for initial licensure is not something that you have in your requirements for initial licensure. You have the exam that Dr. Afkar has passed very recently. But while it does, as board staff has mentioned, it has minor differences, what I also heard was that they're not significantly different. And we noted in our letter that it tests the exact same 9 areas of competence. So, you know, the request is essentially to reconsider requiring that portion of your order as a condition for licensure because you're not allowed to under Arizona law. But moreover, you know, because of the obvious similarities, they might not be identical, but he has just passed the board exam demonstrating his competence. He has graduated from a school demonstrating his competence. The purpose of that test would be to, of course, address his competence. And we believe that the legislature has set forth the ways you're allowed to validate that. And he has met those requirements. The same can be said of the continuing education component that you have ordered, though that is not a requirement for initial licensure, and the board is prohibited by law from imposing it as a condition of licensure. But moreover, you know, we want you to understand how we got here, is that Dr. Afkar did struggle to conclude his board examination, specifically as to part three. In the years between graduating and passing the test, he took the exam 11 times. Trying to get over it. And Dr. Afkar can discuss briefly with you, you know, issues he's had throughout his life with academic testing anxieties. He had issues going on with his family. This was the height of COVID, and they were struck by it significantly with multiple deaths in the family. And then, of course, as anyone may know or may presume, as this process played out, the anxieties only built and built and built. And finally, through a level of perseverance that I think a lot of us would say, I don't know if I could have kept going. I would have probably quit. He didn't quit. He kept going, studying throughout. From the time he graduated to the time he passed that test, his life was pretty much focused on studying and getting to the place where he passed this test. And he ultimately did, and he persevered. And then he comes to the board and is told, guess what? You know, now you have to pass another exam. And so you can imagine the disappointment in thinking I finally, after years of perseverance, overcame this hurdle and I can start my career, only to be told in a surprising way that no, you're going to have to pass a similar exam again just to get over this hump. And so we would ask the board for those reasons. A, it's not legal for you to make this request. And B, it's not logical. He has just passed this test that is very substantially equivalent. As we noted in the letter, Dr. Afkar would be willing to accept the continuing education component to, you know, find a middle ground with the board or to consider with you any alternatives to give you comfort that he's ready to begin his career as a chiropractor with a license from this board. The primary concern is putting yet another testing hurdle in front of him after he has gone through this process. Lastly, I will say that we understood from the history that the board had intended this to be a non-disciplinary outcome. Of course, we'd appreciate that. It would be quite unfortunate to have him start his career with discipline under these issues. He's never done anything wrong, right? We understand the concern, but he's not done anything wrong. I'm not sure that you have a true mechanism to order a term of probation and these requirements as an order for a licensee in a non-disciplinary way. This is not non-disciplinary continuing education. It is an examination. If you know you believe you can, then we would, at minimum, request that be a lot more explicit in the final decision that this is a non-disciplinary order. So with that, Dr. Afkar is here to answer any questions you have. And we would appreciate all the time you spend. Thank you.
Okay, board members, do you have questions for the doctor? We'll start with you, Mr. Turbinson.
No questions for me.
Dr. Sancho?
Yeah, I understand that you did go through some hardships, Doc, and that you had a hard time completing your board. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And basically, like your attorney said, the spec exam is actually not a law requirement to practice in Arizona. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. I have no further questions. Thank you.
Dr. Lee.
I have no questions for the doctor.
I have no questions. Shall we talk about this? Deliberate?
My questions would be for our attorney general if that information is correct or not.
Did you want to entertain a motion to go into executive session for legal advice?
I would like to make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Do I have a second?
I second that.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
We are in executive session.
We're going to go into the executive session, Laura.
Right. We're going into executive session. We'll return shortly. Time is 11:06, and we are back in session. Okay. One final time, doctor. Do you have any questions for Dr. Akar? Additional questions? Dr. Camacho?
No questions.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes. I have one question regarding the... I don't know if you could use the words like testing anxiety or anything like that, but were you able to apply for any accommodations to assist you with like ADA accommodations or anything along those lines for testing for the part three?
No, I never tried.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Neese?
No questions.
I have no questions. Shall we deliberate? Any concerns? Dr. Camacho?
Well, I mean that he just took his, he just finished taking part three, which is very similar to spec. I see no, and the fact that it's not a legal law, you have to take the spec to practice chiropractic. I think that's something that we should definitely tweak and put aside at the moment and let him get his license and continue practicing and begin practicing chiropractic.
And assessment as to competency?
Whatever you might have. I don't know what you might
that's
have.
About to do. That's
yeah.
That's
if you have something, yeah, for competency, yeah, I don't know what you might have for that, though.
Let's talk about the difference between the two so we understand publicly also. Our staff research it. Went further, Dr. Shasha, to get a further explanation about the differences. Could you, Connie, please elaborate on that?
Dr. Shasha just mentioned that the tests are administered in a way that part three is for students that are about to graduate or had just graduated,
and the spec is administered for those that have not been practicing for a certain amount of time. So it's just in the way that it's administered, and the questions are geared more towards those different areas.
Okay, and the second would be you assess competency?
Correct.
Okay. So we know there's a difference. Doctor, were you aware of the difference?
And this is Michael Rain on behalf of Dr. Afkar. I'm not hearing that there's a difference in the subject matter or the purpose. They both test the same subject matter and they both assess competence. I understand there's a different purpose behind them, but I believe Ms. Gillum had already articulated earlier that there is a very similar content and purpose ultimately.
But they are administered differently.
The tests are administered differently.
I'm not sure, honestly, with all due respect, I'm not sure what that really means. One is intended for a recent graduate to obtain a license, and the other one, I believe, is more intended to assess competence of an existing licensee that may not have practiced or may have had concerns with competency while licensed. Many boards have these similar sort of competency exams that they will issue disciplinary orders. You need to go test your competency. So, you know, this spec exam isn't very different than what we see in a lot of state agencies. But we're not talking about a disciplinary competency check. We're talking about having the minimum qualifications for licensure, and part three is your test. I do want to note one thing, just last point I promised briefly, is that there are laws, and we've cited some of them in our response. There are laws in several state agencies that say if you have not passed your examination before initial licensure within some period of time from graduating school, we have these powers. You know, you must have taken your test within a certain amount of time for applying, or you must have graduated within a certain amount of time for before applying. Pyro Board just doesn't have those. And so additional law would say that you can't presume you have them when the legislature has said in other circumstances, we do care about how recent these things happened. They haven't given the Chiro Board that power. Thank you for your time. I'll leave it at that.
It is always our primary concern to protect the public. And I just want you to understand that. We're not trying to take action in any way to punish the doctor. We're trying to make sure that he is competent to practice because of the time lapse that's gone by. So we just need to be careful. We're trying to be reasonable with you. Doctors, any other comments?
Do you by any chance have any questions with you, like the number three exam versus the spec exam?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I do not.
Okay. Well, we really can't see the difference of questions.
Thank you.
I do not.
Okay.
I don't have anything
further. Sorry to interject. Madam Chair, I do understand Dr. Afkar has a job opportunity that I believe is still in place. You may want to understand his practice setting. That could be something he could share with you if it's helpful.
The difference in the two, by the way, the two tests is the application. So, Dr. Lee, is any comments?
Just a quick question. What is it? What practice do you plan on joining?
Joint chiropractic.
I'm sorry, doctor. Say again.
The joint
chiropractic.
So at this time, I think I need to refuse myself for professional reasons.
Okay. All right. Doctor, let the record show that Dr. Kevin Lee has recused himself in this matter. Mr. Jervinson.
So when you said the difference in application, can you explain that a little bit?
Connie, can you elaborate on that, what Dr. Schott said?
I think if I understand it correctly, it's administered how they conduct it is different than how the part three is done. Okay. In your board packet on page two, that last bullet point, and I can read it for you. Conversely, the spec examination is a more in-depth evaluation intended for individuals who have either not practiced chiropractic since their graduation or have experienced a significant lapse in their practice. This differentiation ensures the examination is appropriately aligned with the candidate's current standing and level of practice experience. Dr. Schatz emphasized that the core content of both examinations remains consistent, focusing on the foundation principles and the clinical applications of chiropractic care.
The tailoring lies in the scopes and depths of the assessment, reflecting on the variance in the practical exposure and experience between recent graduates and those re-entering or belatedly entering the profession. This distinction ensures fairness and accuracy in evaluating the competencies for all chiropractic licensure applicants.
So Dr. Schatz specifically recognized that the spec is for belated practitioners who graduate and do
belatedly
not
enter,
belatedly enter. Okay. That's helpful.
Okay. Other comments or questions? I'm certain that Dr. Asghar, that the job of Joanne will be waiting for you when you do, if we decide to ask you to please take that exam. I wouldn't worry about that. I still have some concerns about making sure that you are competent to practice, because we've recognized, and your attorney has said, you have some anxiety issues about testing. I don't know how that'll affect you in practice, but this test might bring forward some of that information. What do you, Doctor?
I'd like to comment. Number one, you know, the practice of manipulation and therapy is not new. You know, it's been around for 4,000 years. Hippocrates practiced manipulative therapy 4,000 years ago. And in essence, the only thing that's really come to bear at this point in this day and age is that we have better ways of technology, like digital exam, special test procedures to find out if a patient is having some discopathies, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Other than that, you know, the practice of chiropractic, unless, you know, something new has come out, basically is the same. There's no real change in it.
You have a motion, Doctor?
I think a motion should be that we should grant Dr. Akbar his license, seeing that he completed what was necessary under state law.
We have a motion. Do I have a second? Here then, we have no second. Is there another motion?
With concerns about the lapse in time and hearing that this spec exam is specifically targeted for this exact circumstance, I would move that the board again offer a non-disciplinary consent agreement for licensure contingent upon passing within 6 months of agreement to the consent agreement, the spec exam with a score of 75% or better. And I'm not sure we need to, I guess I'll add on the continuing education requirements that are included in the board staff recommendation as well, which are within 6 months of agreement to the consent agreement, completing 24 hours of CE in record keeping and documentation, professional boundaries, billing and coding, and jurisprudence.
Okay. Might I make a friendly amendment to that? The continuing education hours could be the 12 hours,
12 hours.
That
okay.
you need for a year rather than separate from the
community. Okay, I agree with that.
Okay.
Yes.
So the motion would be to take and pass the spec within 6 months, right? And within his continuing education hours, he's going to be specific about the courses he should take, which are record keeping and documentation. Go ahead.
Professional boundaries. Billing and coding.
And jurisprudence, for sure. Those four subject matters. Okay. So I hear a second.
Can I add to that motion? And if not signed within, how soon would you like it signed?
Within 10 days?
If not signed within 10 days, then issue an order for denial?
10 days of receipt of it, yes.
Yep. Are we good? All in favor?
We would need to identify, based upon Alyssa's comments about if not signed, then deny the application. You would need to articulate the statutory reference for the basis for that denial.
And can you go back to
sure. Yeah. Let me go back to. Thank you.
I think I have it. Section 32-921, subsection B3, about one requirement for licensure being
physically and mentally able to practice chiropractic skillfully and safely. And our concerns with regards to that are the lapse of time since graduation and being out of any type of setting in which you know, the standards of the chiropractic practice are being regularly adhered to or implemented. Thank you.
All right. Have a motion. Do I hear a second? Can I second? Okay. I will second the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
We have two in favor and one opposed.
And one recused.
And one recused. Pardon me. Thank you. One recused.
Thank you.
Therefore, the motion passes. Okay, doctor, you will be, the board will contact you. We'll be in touch with you. That concludes this task.
The attorney has a hamper if you'd like to.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you there. Go ahead, Mr. Rain. Mr. Rain, you're muted. Has he muted himself?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I believe I heard that the basis of the denial was 32921B2. I think the reference was to B3, but I believe we're referencing B2. And in addition, I just want to confirm that the board then, as part of its decision, has determined that Dr. Afkar is not mentally able to practice. That has to be the finding, that he has failed to satisfy that requirement. I just want to make sure we have confirmation on the record that it's B2 and that the finding is that he is not mentally capable.
It's not B2.
No, it's not B2.
Is it B3? I may be. I'm looking at a statute now. I don't know if it's been recently updated.
It's
C3. Okay. I'll defer to you on that. Yeah, but can we confirm, we would request just confirmation on the record that the finding of fact is in
32921B3. Be physically and mentally able to practice chiropractic skills skillfully and safely.
Okay, we can accept that we're talking about, but the more important issue for us is that the board is determining as a matter of fact, supporting its denial, that Dr. Afkar is not mentally able to practice the profession. This isn't a question to establish it. We're to reach a denial on that basis. It's our understanding you have determined that he is not.
No, we have made a motion and we're going to move on.
Okay. Then you have not made that finding, but we'll address it with staff. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. Item 10, tab 6. It is a whether to open.
I quoted it.
Okay, yeah, we're good. Sorry.
And, you know, my book could be wrong. It's now B2, but whatever it is, we'll correct it. I have my book says it's a 2018 edition. I don't know if it's.
We'll take a look. We're working on that, so we'll get that.
Okay.
Sure. So we're going to verify that. All right. We're ready to move on. Next on the agenda, item 10, tab 6, whether to open case number 2025-010, Connor or DC. Is Connor Gore present today? Doctor? No.
No, Madam Chair, none of the weather to opens will be here today.
Okay, so we move on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that gets item 10, tab
6. No, we're going to do them. They're just not going to physically be here.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Okay. So back to Dr. Connor Gore. He is not present today, not represented by legal counsel, I take it.
But, Madam Chair, these matters are before you. These complaints have come in to board staff, and board staff is asking for direction that based on the information that was received by board staff, do we have enough information to open these complaints and begin an investigation? We have not investigated these complaints. We are only providing you the information that was presented to us and to determine if the board feels these rise to the level that need to be further investigated. So there's no additional materials, only what came in the complaint. And we are just asking you for a open a complaint or not open a complaint and close it as if we don't have jurisdiction over the matter. That helps clarify why we're here today.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for that clarification. So, we've all read the materials. Dr. Lees, do you have any questions?
My question was the allegation that he's referring to himself as a neurologist. I did not see that on here. That
it's in the video. If you'd like, if we can.
Yeah, that's. Does he actually say that in the video?
He does. He.
Okay.
Let me get into the complaint. I don't know if I can pull.
I couldn't get the.
Yeah, so sometimes the links work and sometimes they don't.
If somebody is misrepresenting their qualifications or title, do we issue a cease and desist in those cases?
In the past, it's been either a non-disciplinary order for continuing education for misleading or advertising or failure to identify the CC, or if a non-disciplinary advisory letter. So it just depends on the egregiousness and how you would like to proceed and what kind of comes out of the investigation.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, and Alyssa, correct me if I'm wrong, but for you would first want to open up a complaint and then give the individual an opportunity to respond, and then once we have all that information, we bring it back before you for.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
We would need to investigate that first. But
so,
and you're not making, all you're determining today is
whether to open,
whether we need to open this as a complaint or.
I didn't know if we were able to view that.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull it.
We just need a motion then.
Let me see if I can get it. Oh, this one came in through the investigation. Sorry, I thought when I provided you the link that it would work.
Mine
I apologize, that didn't.
Mine didn't open either when I tried.
I can put up on my phone.
Oh, I hear it.
It says functional neurologist.
Yeah, functional neurologist.
But
that
is
claimed
to be a neurologist.
Way for chiropractors to say they're involved in the functional aspect of lab disorder.
Yeah, I think his well, other stuff mentions he's a chiropractor on his.
Mm-hmm.
So functional neurologist, whether that's.
Basically, that could be a word that could mean a lot of things, like, for example, I think he uses a test here that he says that the baby didn't do some kind of like a Babinski test, you know, the Babinski, right? You know, and if it does that, and if it doesn't do that, that means there's an issue somewhere neurologically. I think that's what he wants to say, that functional neurology will have a test to see if you have an issue with something like that. Muscle testing could be functional neurology. Straight leg raises to see if it's positive or negative could be functional neurology.
And I think that would be different than functional neurologist.
Right. You really say functional neurologist or functional neurologist?
He says he's a functional neurologist. Let me pull
well,
it.
Well,
let me try to
thing,
make
really?
It as loud as I can.
But he's not a neurologist.
I'm Dr. Connor Boer. I'm a functional neurologist, and I work with kids with neurodevelopmental delays. And let's talk a little bit more about this video. This reflex
so
here is called the
foramen
reflex, and what this baby does is 100% appropriate, and it's really what they should be doing. If they're not doing it, that shows that there can be some sort of neurological issue. This right here is an example of what a primitive
emotion
reflex looks like.
Madam Chair, this is Kevin Lees. I move to open this investigation so we can get better idea of what's going on.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Oh.
Okay, we have 3 in favor and 1 opposed.
You may want to try to download that video.
We have it.
Okay.
I've got it, yeah. I've got it in the materials. I thought if I gave you the link, it would work, but we've screen captured it and we'll get it.
We're on to the next tab. That would be tab 7. Whether to open in 2025-009 Bradley Forbes, BC. Dr. Forbes, are you present today? No. Well, you did tell me that. No one is. Okay. Board members, questions?
And Madam Chair, if I may, this is again another whether to open.
Mm-hmm.
It's come in as a complaint. Board staff is asking for direction regarding the complaint. It looks like that he has a clinic. He does not identify himself on his website as a DC. He treated this patient. She was unaware that he was a chiropractor. She went in for neuropathy treatment, and he had his nurse practitioner conduct a punch hole biopsy on her leg, and then it turned out it appeared that her vein got sniffed. For staff asking for directional whether or not this rises to the level of complaint and is within our jurisdiction. And so that's the question.
And he is a DC?
He is, yes. Yeah.
But the procedure was performed by a nurse practitioner, right?
In his clinic. She referred him. The doctor referred the patient to the nurse practitioner for the biopsy.
Mm-hmm. Independent practice or works for him?
He has a clinic, a group of clinics.
Okay. He's an employee.
Yeah. It's called City Health Services.
Would these all be investigated if we did it open, right? Mm-hmm. We'd find out all these answers.
Yeah, you'll get her medical records, all of that.
Motion.
Yeah. This is Kevin Lees. I move to open.
Can I have a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Four in favor? Nay. Okay, the ayes have it. We'll move on to the next tab. Tab 8. Jeffrey Robinson, D.C., whether to open. He is not present today or represented by legal counsel. Could I get a court brief, Ms. Evans?
Yes, ma'am. This matter is before you as to whether to open on determining whether or not to open a complaint. The board received allegations against Dr. Jeffrey Robinson for what appears to be prescribing to two patients a substance called DMSA as a course of treatment for, I believe it's lead detoxification. And so we are asking for direction as to do you feel that this rises to the level of opening a complaint and investigation, or if it is outside the board's jurisdiction.
Is DMSA not, it's not a prescription drug, is it? It is a prescription drug? You can only get it by prescription.
That's correct.
And I don't think you can get it in the United States, right?
The complaint claims that they ordered it from Africa. And the FDA says there is no FDA-approved over-the-counter clean products. The FDA approved pleation agents are available by prescription only and are approved for use in specific indications such as lead poisoning and iron overload.
I did see in the different texts going back and forth that there was a mention of maybe another provider in there, but it's not really clear if that person is the one who prescribed it or if they're just seeing them separately. So again, I would lean towards just opening so we can get a better idea. Maybe this is not from this provider, but I don't think we'll know until we get an investigation.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion?
This is Kevin Lees. I move to open.
I'll second that.
Dr. Quattro, second. All in favor?
Aye.
All in there. All opposed? The ayes have it. We will open this gate. Okay. We have item 17. Sandra, if you could present a brief, please.
Yes, ma'am. I think the first item is I provided in your material three policies and procedures that we are in the process of updating. The first is the continuing education policy and procedures and communications for continuing education and continuing education audits. And this is just formalizing that now that we have the CENTIA portal, and as part of the renewal process, we receive all CE certificates as part of that. So every applicant's license renewal application is now audited for compliance with the continuing ed requirements. So we no longer doing random audits. It's really just formalizing what's already occurring with the development and use of CENTIA now that we've received those CE certificates as part of the renewal process. So again, that's just formalizing that, and then also providing some communication for us to send out to licensees just as a reminder of this is how the process works, this is what we're doing. The second policy and procedure that's in your folder is in regards to board meetings, and it's really just formalizing and updating existing policy in terms of how we prep for board meetings, how we organize them, just so there's some consistency in that we'll maintain long after I am gone and anyone else is gone. So just updating those policies as part of this is also part of the audit process and cleaning that up. And then the final one is addressing it's not a common occurrence, especially now that we've moved to CENTIA and everything, all applications and renewals are paid for by credit card. But on those occasions, we do receive checks. It's just the policy of what to happen should the board receive a check and there's not sufficient funds, and that license or that application is placed either on administrative suspension or is held until that is addressed. So it's just formalizing those policies so that we continue to have those documented and are consistent in how we are utilizing.
In the policy, does it explain, does it state that we would notify them? Do they get
We do. We send them an admin suspension letter and the reason that that's happening, and that can't be corrected until they've paid the check and they pay the $25 insufficient check fee as part of that, and that we would only accept those by cashier's check, that they can't write us another personal check. So. Okay. And so I just needed a motion to adopt those three.
Kevin Lees, I move that we adopt the policy changes made by the board staff.
A second?
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a first and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Yes, you have what you need. Next on the agenda, item 18?
No, still 17.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right. First item I have is more just kind of a status as to just historically looking at the total number of complaints that the board's received. As of right now, not including the three cases you just opened, the board has 39 complaints for fiscal year 2025. 9 are high priority, 7 are low priority, and then 23 are medium priority.
Where do we stand as far as being behind or ahead or in line with?
So for total cases, the oldest case we have goes back to June of 2021. There are 69 cases, not including the three that you just opened, that is dating back, that are pending initial action. So they've not had anything done with them. In terms of open cases, so meaning cases that are somewhere in the process, in addition to the 69 cases, we have 75 total open cases at this time. In terms of cases that we closed going back to 2022, the board has successfully closed 146 cases total. And then going back all the way to 2018, the board has closed 259 cases. And again, we have a total of 75 that are open. But as you can see, it's many of you who sat around this table can remember when we started in 2022, we had cases still from 2018 that were open. And again, we're getting down to the last of those cases. 18's closed, 20's closed. just got a couple cases left in 21 and 22. And so, and we're actively working through the 2024 cases now and 2025.
And the reason we get behind is anything to do with our administrative staff, correct? You have a lot of attorneys that don't respond quickly and you don't get records on time. I just want to.
So it's a lot of nuances, and I think there are a lot of nuances that we've had a lot of discussions around, I think, very much so. A lot of it has to do with priority of complaints, complexity of complaints. We stopped using the term priority. We started using complexity, recognizing that high complex cases involve more work, like a sexual misconduct case. In a lot of cases, is more technical, more difficult. It takes longer to work through and wade through all that material. And it can be things like waiting for criminal proceedings to continue. So we have to pause and wait while that happens. And so those things are very common, but there are other functions that we can have everything ready. And then there can be a delay on their end. They've requested, it takes us time to file materials. So when we have to send out those multiple requests for information, multiple subpoenas, takes us longer to glean and gather that information, which takes us longer to collect that. In addition, resources have to shift based on what comes in. Obviously, we are going to prioritize a more complex case over a lower complex case. And so trying to find that right balance of getting as many of those addressed and pushed through the process and thoroughly investigated as possible, and to depends on where an investigation takes you and what occurs. So there's a lot of that that goes into that as well. You're welcome. Total number of days, cases that we have that are over 180. This is our most recent number. So we've had, you know, we kind of seem to have an ebb and flow. And so on average, it usually comes out to about 45 cases just over the course of the last 3 years of where we've been with that. So. We are working on that. This is just cases that are pending other actions in that 75. So we had the formal hearing. You had that today. So you'll see that fall off. We have none that are pending a formal interview, but we do have two cases that have been continued and then two that are stayed. Oh, no, we don't have any that are stayed. All four of the cases are just at this point continued. So that just means you've had initial action, but directed us to go back and do some additional investigation, and we are still investigating that information. Life insurance applications. Going back to 2020, just where we are with licensures. As of right now, we have received 101 applications, and we have issued 107 licenses. And just this starts to happen, you kind of start to notice this at the end of the year, right? We had applications we received last year, like in June, and obviously we don't approve those till later into the next fiscal year. So that's just, we're starting to see that roll over from where we had applications last year and have now since approved them. But so numbers are back up a little bit more consistent with what we've seen in the past. And so we are busily issuing licenses. Renewals. So we've already received 963 applications for renewals, and that's about 40% of our total licensees, which is about where we should be now that we've moved into this rolling cycle of renewal applications. We currently have, in terms of licensees, we have 2,380 that have an active license, 54 that are inactive, 80 that are retired, 7 on probation, which that number will go down because we release someone. And then we have 196 on administrative suspension. And we've seen this number tick up a little bit as we've started to clear out some of those incomplete renewal applications, meaning they had 60 days to cure their renewal for deficiency. Either they didn't submit their proper number of CEs or they didn't submit CEs that may be qualified. They have 60 days to cure that. If they don't cure that, their license is placed on admin suspension until they correct that and they pay that reinstatement fee. So those letters go out now the first of every month, and we're pretty consistent in that. So we're seeing kind of a peak, and then they kind of come down as those are addressed. you'll see this is kind of back to that point. You know, like in January, we only have one incomplete application. So once that admin suspension goes out, we are, those doctors are curing those and getting those corrected. So like February, we don't have any. March, we have two. So you'll see that obviously we just finished May, so we have 33 there. And then we have 19 already for June. These are just licensee population. Obviously, mostly what we have are, they're either on admin suspension or they are active, and that number didn't update. We're also seeing an increase in reinstatement applications, which with the rolling renewal cycle, so now if they go longer than, which it's the same process, it's just a little different. They go longer than 6 months past their expiration date, they then have to reinstate their license. So if they don't cure that application quickly and it goes longer than that, they are having to complete a reinstated application and reapply. So we are seeing some of that occur. We've issued 39 specialty certificates and in that, in the areas of PMMTP, acupuncture, and percutaneous therapy. We've also received this year 16 applications for externs, 5 applications for business entities, and 178 chiropractic assistant registrations. So we are working through that. We're working that with the doctors, trying to get those CAs to update their information and get that information into the CINCIA portal. Continuing education applications. We have 229 applications that we've approved. We have 204 that still need to be processed for a total of 433 applications. So you see, obviously more than last year, and I would expect 2025 to probably mirror and be closer to 2023 because of that two-year renewal cycle for continuing ed. We see a lot those renewals kind of blow over and push that number up. I would expect that we will get close to that 500 number this year. Our board finances, we have received the last portion of our appropriations, so that's the $643,000 that we receive annually for operating. Expenditures were at about almost $500,000. In terms of revenue, and we expected this, that we only have 6 months of revenue this year because of the rolling renewal cycle. So we only receive in this, because renewals run on calendar year, we operate on the state's fiscal year, so the end of the fiscal year is here at the end of the month. So we were anticipating this year we would only receive about 50% of our revenue, which is why we had done the extension fee and charged everybody kind of up front when they renewed in 2023 for 24. So.
And does it make up for that?
It until they took it.
They took it.
The legislature took $500,000 from us last year.
Without our permission.
So just here's where we are. Revenues are a bit less than we anticipated. I'm monitoring that. But also expenditures have been well below what they normally would have been. So that completes my report. Do you have any questions for me?
No.
I also put in your packet your review, a memo from me. We have received, we are due for our 5-year annual review for GRC, which is the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, which means we should go before them, present our rules, and a state that they are still accurate, they still reflect all of that. That is due in August of this year. I put forth a memo to you. I'm looking for a motion to perhaps request that we get the 1-year extension and allow us to make the updates that we've been discussing before we go before them.
Are they usually granted?
They will grant the 1-year extension. I just wasn't sure that it made a lot of sense for us to go to FERC, say everything's good, and then rewrite a bunch of our rules.
motion, anyone?
Yes, please. I move that we allow the board to ask for a one-year extension to amend the rules for the GERC.
My second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Ayes have it. And the meetings, do your thing. Okay, shall we take a 10-minute break?
I only have, I have one item.
Okay.
And it's just
very good.
Let me get to, Dr. Bennett provided me with his summary. Dr. Bennett, myself, and Connie, we attended the annual meeting of the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners and the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards in St. Louis. We did a presentation on AI, insights to the many new ways that IA can be used universally, some information that was provided about the impact of AI on the regulatory environment, during a presentation from the NBC staff, the option of standardized psychometrically valid ethics and jurisprudence exam was offered to state boards. The exam would either be proctored or non-proctored and would be delivered online anytime. The cost to the state board would be zero, and the option would likely reduce staff resources related to this licensure requirement and provide a more dispensable examination. A report from the SCLB staff was provided by the recognized chiropractic specialty programs. And the initiation, it's the initiative of the SCLB, and its primary goal is to identify and endorse chiropractic specialty certification programs that meet the rigorous standards in education, testing, and quality, ensuring that they align with the expectations of chiropractic licensing boards. It would serve multiple purposes, which is for chiropractors, it provides a reliable framework to evaluate and select specialty certification programs that are recognized for their quality and adherence to regulatory standards. For licensing board, it assists in the evaluation and approval of specialty programs, ensuring that practitioners' credentials are credible, consistent across jurisdictions. And for the program providers, it offers a pathway to demonstrate compliance with established standards and facilitate broader recognition and acceptance of their programs. They've offered to come and present the board, so we are working to schedule them to come make a presentation to us. We had a panel discussion with the attorneys that represent boards, and we had discussions around boards who are addressing rule and statute changes. We were encouraged to use the SCLB toolkits, which provides resources for this purpose from the SCLB website, so obviously we will be utilizing that. During the same discussion, there was a topic regarding the regulatory related language related to dry needling performed by chiropractic assistants, which was addressed, and state boards were encouraged to inspect their regulatory language for possible need for revision relevant to this subject. Then we did a presentation by the physician health plan, the potential value, which discussed the potential value of regulatory boards' relationship with plans and their respective jurisdictions. There is a physician health plan here in Arizona which offers services that would be valuable to our board, including fitness for duty assessments and other services. And with that, that completes Dr. Bennett's SCLB NBC update. And with that, that completes my report.
Nope. Thank you, Sandra, for moving on. Okay. Item 18.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Which is the Assistant Attorney General's
report? And I will keep my report short. I would just like to introduce myself to the board. My name is Austin Byram. I started working for the Attorney General's office at the end of April, and I'm really looking forward to helping the board and serving the board and providing legal advice to the board. So don't have anything to report, but looking forward to working with y'all over the next couple of years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to
keep the questions? That wasn't a sworn
intent.
That was
it's on record.
Welcome. Glad to have you on board.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 20, future agenda items. Does anyone have anything they'd like to put on the agenda for our next meeting?
Oh.
The president.
presentation that the school in California wants to do for us, about 15 minutes. They're thinking about bringing that up to the vision of chiropractic school.
I just want to note on the record that Dr. Camacho has left.
Yeah. For the record, Dr. Camacho has left the room.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have noted that. So I would like that. If possible, Ms. Vanderveen, to be on the agenda for our next meeting.
You will work on that.
Okay. Anyone else? Nope. Item 21. Our next regularly scheduled meeting is for Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025, 9 o'clock at 1740 West Adams Street, Boardroom C. And with no other issues before us, I declare this meeting adjourned.